Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. And, of course, a great service department that takes care of the routine. They take care of inspections, diagnostics. They do everything there. It's really one-stop vehicle shopping. It is at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. So I'm watching the Sixers-Bucks game last night, and all I can do is picture one individual going to the medicine cabinet repeatedly because it just... Oh, well.
Yeah, that was a tough one last night.
Not really. But, you know, that's... not really.
I mean, there's nothing else to say. James Harden, for the last couple of games now, in these bigger games, sure, he was sensational in the first quarter. He kept the Sixers in it and was a big reason why he led, but he came up very small in that fourth quarter last night. But also, too...
Excuse me. Say that again?
I think James Harden came up small last night again in the fourth quarter. It's been a bad trend lately.
Okay, say that again?
Yeah.
Really?
I am saying that.
Did somebody happen to mention that to you at the trade?
Yes, you
did. Did somebody happen to bring it up that in the big moments in the playoffs, somebody happened to bring that up? No?
Correct.
Am I missing something here?
No, you're not missing anything. And that's why I was still excited about the trade, but I was still cautiously optimistic because I knew... These are some of the things that I was afraid of during the trade. It's still a good trade because Ben Simmons is still on the bench doing whatever he's doing.
No, it is a good... Look, they're better off the way it worked out. I'm just saying...
But yeah, I mean, he's been very disappointing in these spots right now.
This is your guy.
Yeah.
This is the person that makes your world go round.
I'll also say this. Doc Rivers has been very unimpressive this season. I mean, some of the plays he drew up late. Hey, what is he thinking?
Of you.
Of course. Of course he does.
All right. We have another interesting show on tap for today. The suit's going to be filling in for me the rest of the way, and it's going to be Matt in the suit. No? That's not the show we're doing.
Oh my almighty!
I'm gonna go out and hit some golf balls. Be good. Have a good time. But we have Rob Beer Temple today from spring training, and we have NCAA wrestling champion Max Dean. See, are you happy now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only getting guests that make you happy. I'm a little worried about you right now.
Always appreciated.
I just want to make sure that, you know, it's all good. I'm worried about you. All right.
I mean, honestly, though, when it comes to the Sixers, I'm okay. I'm actually a little bit more than okay if they don't get the one or the two seed. I want them to be the one, the two, or the four as the way things stand right now.
Well, they're done playing anybody in the upper echelon.
Correct. Yeah, everybody's sixth or worse now the rest of the way.
Yeah, right, the rest of the way.
Because if they're fourth right now, you get a home court for the first round, you play Chicago, and they are a much better team than Chicago. They've taken care of them all the year. I would love that for a first-round matchup.
They are a much better team than Chicago. There's no getting around it.
And I think they can beat anybody in the 7-10 bracket in the play-in, other than the Nets obviously scare me. And so if you're I think the Nets are going to get the 7 seed, so that means I don't want them being the 2 seed either. But you never know how that's going to play out.
I think they will struggle tremendously with the Nets. I don't think they can get past them.
I'm starting to fear that myself.
Because now that Durant and Irving are both playing, and Irving is playing every day.
Yep, and playing well.
I think that changes a lot of things in that series. Until Williams got hurt, the Celtics were a notch better than Philadelphia. Williams getting hurt sets the Celtics back defensively. He's not really an offensive force. God, I remember when he was at Texas A&M and Penn State played them in, ironically, at Barclays in Brooklyn. He played decently on offense that night, and I saw him the night before against Oklahoma State. And I was like, but defensively, you're like, boy, this guy can play. Well, that's what he's been in the NBA. He's been a really good defensive player, but you know, but they don't have a matchup for Tatum. They don't have a matchup for Jaylen Brown. Williams could at least give Joel Embiid. He'd make him work for his points.
Yep,
he'd still get his points. Okay, let's not be silly here. explain to me why Joel Embiid didn't take that last shot. That's what gets me. Know what's going on here.
Well, the play that I'm talking about, that where I put blame on Doc Rivers, is the attempt he had before the last attempt by Harden, and then Embiid got blocked. Yeah. That was not a good setup for Embiid at all.
No,
not a good setup.
When the play happened, I've seen a lot of games in my life. When he put it up, I go, "That's a block," and they said goaltending. I said, "Goaltending? That's not goaltending." And as soon as they showed the replay, that was not a good play by Giannis. That was a great play by Giannis. So, all right. I knew you'd be happy that we got Max Dean on the show.
Absolutely.
Get an NCAA wrestling champ on. We'll call this the Dick from Milton segment. What do you think? We'll just name the segment after Dick.
We should.
Yeah. Still want to hear what Dick thought about going to Detroit. Now, probably in terms of the ability to get there, probably the convenience of getting there was exponentially better than trying to get to Tulsa, but still, which is next year. But Rory McIlroy, this is right up your alley. Tiger Woods' participation in Masters would be phenomenal for golf, Rory McIlroy says. McIlroy said, despite what Matt Catrillo thinks, golf needs Tiger Woods. Oh. Boy, in fact, he included your name in there. I think it's impressive Rory knows you.
I appreciate the sentiment.
But he didn't appreciate your comments.
Because he's part of the problem. He's had many times, especially recently, to like really take golf by storm when he had the number one overall ranking. And then he sunk tremendously.
Matt, look. I've talked about this many times in many sports. You know what's really hard to do? Win. It's hard to win. You want to know what? Let's take an individual sport like golf. You want to know what makes golf really difficult to win? Is that you play really well, and for some reason, that guy over there has the weekend of his life. You can't control what the other guy does. It's not as if Rory hasn't had opportunities to win and then didn't play well. That has happened. No question. That has happened. But it's difficult in something like that where you can play well and that other guy just plays better. You can't control that. You just can't control it. Colin Montgomery, a great player during his prime. Not a good player, great player. He didn't win any majors. He won none. Kept finishing second, third, fourth. Is he a failure? Now, to you in the Philadelphia mindset, he's a total, complete failure. I mean, that would be like me saying from 1961 to 2016, the Eagles were complete failures. Oh, wait. They actually were. All right, but... Hey, did you see your teams going back to the alternate Kelly Green jerseys this year?
It's about time. Thank you, NFL, for finally waking up out of that hole.
Well, the team has to request it.
They have. Jeff Lurie's been requesting it since 2018. NFL's all of a sudden is about player safety. Oh, we can't have a second helmet because of player safety. Stop. How hard is it to make a second helmet? And don't give me the player safety garbage like you normally do. Because there would be 100 other things involved. This is long, long, long overdue. I'm thrilled that it's back. But that second helmet thing is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of.
Well, yeah, no. They're trying to keep concussions down, so they're trying to, that's not as... that's the issue that, for example, Antonio Brown, I want to keep wearing the same helmet. Got guys, it doesn't conform. So there'll be the alternate jersey in 2020. Like, man, I wish they'd just go back to that as their primary.
No, I like the current jerseys, but it's cool to have the Kelly Green look. I loved it when they did it in 2010 for the opening game.
Current jerseys are dark, dank, and dismal. It's like a November afternoon. Sorry.
And then there's the black helmet that I'm looking forward to seeing, too, just for this season.
The black helmet?
Yes. It's going to match the Eagles' black uniform. The new black. The Eagles have had the black jerseys for a while, but now they have the full black uniform.
It is going to match the fans' dark mood in the stands.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to bring up a topic here in a moment. And it is as follows. Could name, image, and likeness keep guys who are on near the line of being pro-drafted but may not be and keep them in school an extra year? Could name, image, and likeness actually do that? We'll talk about that in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors.
No good! No good! No good!
The reaction when it was announced that the suit had his contract renewed for Shikellamy football.
Oh, boy.
Oh, come on. You wish you were that quick.
You are pretty good with that.
Even he's laughing. It's a 12-year deal. All right. So here's something that's interesting. Name, image, and likeness. Could that possibly play a role in somebody who's a really good college player, but not an elite player where you look at him and go, oh, there's an NFL guy. Might be an NFL guy, but like is in that gray area. Now, let's give you an example. Let's use somebody who's a name, image, and likeness, their name wouldn't come up because it wasn't in existence when they played. So let's take, in basketball, Luka Garza, Iowa, National Player of the Year. Freshman, Dick and I are looking at each other like, okay. You know, you attacked him. You went at him. Second year, you went at him. All right, he's not a factor out there. Third year, what changed? Wow, he's pretty good. He can step outside. He can shoot it. He can, you know, he's not the fastest guy out there, but you know what? He's got great footwork in the post. Okay? And, of course, his senior year, great. So let's take Luka Garza at the end of his third year. The problem that he's going to have is that Luka Garza, 15 to 18 years ago, would have been a lottery pick. Guy that size, post moves, things like that. Wow. But the NBA has changed. And it's changed in such a way where Luka Garza would get a grade of what he ended up getting. He would have been a late second or free agent. So what might happen in a case such as his is that he'd get that late second free agent grade and look around and go, you know what? I'm going to make some money, and I can make it here at Iowa because I've got name, image, and likeness. You might see a series of players across the country that make the decision to stay in school and not go directly to an NBA or NFL draft because they don't like the draft grade, and A, they want a chance to get the grade higher if they can, but they'll still be able to make money on the collegiate level because of name, image, and likeness. I think it's something that it's something in the next 3 to 4 years, we've got to take a long look as to how that's going to play out. Because I think it could end up playing a role in how people make up their minds as to what they're doing.
I definitely think that is a very, very big possibility.
Oh, you want to know Rob Beer Temple or Max? We're going to Rob Beer Temple next. We're going to talk about spring training. Doug asked if that the fan reaction on the suit. He wanted to know what the reaction was at Shikellamy, and my understanding was is they felt they had nowhere else to turn.
I was not involved in the contract negotiations, so I can't confirm or deny.
Well, no, I mean, you're a big timer now. You're doing TV.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummelsworth. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And the service department, inspections great, routine great, diagnostics great. It really is one-stop vehicle shopping at the best in the business. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. I mean, now that you've gone big time with TV, it's, you know, schools which are begging you, it's not happening. You're too big for them now.
Miz, what it is.
I like your confidence. Comes off as a little cocky, but I like your confidence. All right, let's take a trip down to spring training, where stunningly it is warmer than here. From The Athletic, Rob Beer Temple. Hello, Rob. Great to have you back.
Steve, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm wearing a hoodie.
It's but great.
That's just because the press box here at Lee Com Park is about 5 to 7 degrees colder than it is down in the field, because we face right into the wind, and there's a little bit of a breeze blowing today. So it's like 74. If you're down in the sun, it probably feels like 80, but if you're in the press box, it feels like the mid-60s.
Yeah, so 42 here. All right, so Ron, I want to start with Brian Reynolds. You wrote a great piece on Brian Reynolds, because now he's into the arbitration phase of his career. You're talking about a payroll of $35 million for the Pirates. They aren't even talking extension with him. How do you view his situation with the Pirates and the fact they didn't even talk to him in this cycle about any kind of long-term deal?
Yeah, how do you... It's a version of a question I get a lot, which is generally like, how do you wrap your brain around the Pirates in the first place? And that's... You know, their business model is... Well, yeah, I mean, we've seen what it is. They keep their costs low. They run their guys up through their years of team control. And then once they get into arbitration, it seems like it's just a matter of time before, you know, they move on. And with Reynolds, it's kind of a different situation in some ways, because he's 27 and he's just reaching arbitration now.
Yeah.
But he's a Super 2 guy, so he's got 4 years of team control.
Right.
I know that they offered him a multi-year extension in 2020, and they offered him another one before last season. And each time he turned it down, I haven't been able to uncover the exact dollar amounts, but I'm guessing from his reaction that they didn't blow anybody away. Mm-hmm. So this year with the arbitration situation, I was a little surprised to hear Brian say that they never mentioned, you know, a multi-year situation with him, that they were just looking at getting something done for 2022. Does that mean that they don't want to keep him? Well, not necessarily. I mean, I think they would certainly like to keep him at least, you know, through those arbitration and maybe even a couple of years of free agency. But at what cost? And it's difficult to gauge right now because we're, you know, the team, gosh, there's nobody signed to a multi-year deal. So many of these guys are those 0-3 guys, you know, where they're not even eligible for arbitration yet because of service time. So you're never going to find a more bargain basement type situation. If there's ever a moment when you want to try to throw some money at a guy who, you know, has proven his value and is the closest thing to a star you have, and the fans all love him, and it just seems like a no-brainer. So the fact that the Pirates are kind of dragging their feet on it a little bit, I mean, it's frustrating, but that's kind of where it is.
Yeah, I think they just signed, what, 34-0-3 guys, right?
Yeah, and the way that works is they really, you know, a lot of times that's not where even a negotiation.
Right.
You know, the Pirates say, here's where we're going to pay you, and you're 0-3. You can't do anything about it.
Right.
So, you know, sometime every now and then a player doesn't sign one of those contracts just as a, you know, a sort of a thumb-your-nose kind of protest thing. Garrett Cole did that a few years back when he was here. Right. But more often than not, the players just sign it and everybody moves on.
Yeah. All right. The Cruz situation is interesting because obviously the tragedy in his life that unfortunately he created. But he's getting his second opportunity here. When you watch him hit, just from a pure baseball point of view, what are we looking at here with him?
Well, when he makes contact, I mean, he hit a ball the other day down in Port Charlotte, which is where the Rays train out beyond right field there. They call it Building A, which is this, you know, it's a kind of a standard issue two-story building where they have some offices, team offices, and some stuff in the ground floor, workout facility and such, clubhouse. He hit a ball, and it was just one of those ones you could tell. He just hit it perfect, you know, sweet spot. It landed on the roof of Building A. Just a titanic shot. He's capable of that stuff. And he's got speed where he can turn dribblers into infield singles. And, you know, he's going to, if he finds the gap, he's going to get two, maybe three bags on it. So offensively, there's this really, you know, the sky could be the limit. I mean, because, you know, he seems to have, the first term run he hit down here, he like went down to one knee and hit a ball a couple inches off the ground. So his hot zone probably starts at his ankles, goes up to his eyeballs, and and with those long arms goes like 3 feet in each direction. So, boy, he can do so much. Defensively, they got to figure it out. Shortstop, well, you know, he's 6'7", and yeah, that's a bit of an issue.
Yes.
There's a lot of moving parts there.
He is 6'7", but there's also a possibility that he starts in Indianapolis.
True. Yeah, I would, you know, I was kind of hoping in a way that they would make him the opening day shortstop. It would be kind of a way to say, hey, we're going to, you know, this is the first step. We're going to try to win with these guys, and here's the first guy. And but now it really starts to look, you know, just from what the Pirates are saying, that he's going to be at Indy to start the year, splitting his time at short and outfield. I'm looking at him right now. He's jogging off the field after the inning. He started in left field today.
Yeah.
It's his first outing in the outfield. Man, caught a ball, another one kind of a little looper landed in front of him. You know, I don't know. Some people said maybe he misplayed it. I don't think so. It's just, it's tough to play. I mean, the conditions down here, you got swirling wind, you got sun. There's no clouds at all today, so it's a, you know, 10-mile-high sky. You know, it's not even easy for a veteran to play the outfield in these conditions. So I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass. But I think he needs to get out into an outfield and get some time there and learn how to play spin on ball, you know, in the corners and play the lines and things like that. Hit cutoff guys, that stuff that just comes from repetition. He was just getting ready to do it last year at Altoona when he hurt his forearm. And then they kind of shut that plan down, giving him time in the outfield until he healed up, and then it was too late in the season to do it. So he's going to go to Indy, I guess, and get some of that experience, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Well, but now we've got the DH. Why can't he?
Yeah.
Why can't he be a DH?
You know, he could be, but it seemed almost, I mean, he's got that powerful arm. You know, sometimes too powerful for short, I think.
Yeah.
I really would like to see him in right field every day.
Right.
Which is, you know, I know it's right field at PNC. You got the Clemente wall, and that can be tricky to play and blah, blah, blah. But, boy, I just, you know, he's got that Dave Parker kind of arm out there, and I could just see him in right field making throws and, you know, and nailing guys. So, DH would be nice. But you wonder if – I really think he just needs to play the position every day and get out there and see balls hit at him in all kinds of different situations and weather and different skies and whatnot.
All right. What about the three young catchers? And obviously Henry Davis is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
The future catchers coming out of this group. So what are you seeing in this group?
For the guy who – I mean, and Henry gets a lot of attention, and deservedly so. I mean, I saw him the other day on a backfield – he faced Kenley Jansen. It was Jansen's first outing with the Braves, so they sent him to a minor league game to kind of get him a little, you know, some pitches. And Davis struck out in his first at bat, and then took him deep, I think, in the second. You know, Henry's solidly built. He looks like a catcher. He looks like a big leaguer already. He's got the attitude, the mental approach. Teammates kind of gravitate toward him. He's kind of that, you know, I don't want to say father figure, but he's a leader. You know, he's a guy who doesn't mind taking on that role. Defensively, he needs to sharpen a little bit, and that's just going to come with catching guys, you know, catching big league caliber pitchers and learning the ins and outs of calling a game. So that'll come. I mean, he'll be fast-tracked. You probably will see him in Altoona this year. You know, maybe if not to start the year, definitely, I think, by the midseason, you'll see him in Altoona. The guy I really like from their catcher mix, though, is Andy Rodriguez. Boy.
Yes.
And he's tall, thin, not, you know, real thin, but still, you know, thinner than you think for a catcher sometimes. I could see him moving to the outfield and being very successful. He's got some pop, outgoing guy. That's one thing I've really noticed in this camp is the prospects, quote-unquote. You know, guys like Leober Piguero and Andy Rodriguez and Nick Gonzalez. A lot of these guys have so much more personality, really, than a lot of the guys who are even on the big league team. I think it's, you know, when they all finally get up there, it's going to be a very loose, fun team to watch, and that's intriguing as well. So just beyond all the physical tools, there's an atmosphere there that they bring, and it's a lot of swagger, it's a lot of confidence.
Which is, look, that's important, no question, especially the mm-hmm. loose part of it. I mean, they're kids. Maybe they all go out and play as kids, which could be fun. What do you see with the pitching staff right now?
Oh, boy. Well, that's one area where they got work to do. I'm putting together a story for tomorrow about the way the big league rotation probably will look on opening day. Jose Quintana, who's, it's a shame it's not 5 years ago when they first tried to get him.
Right.
He's coming off a bum shoulder last year that really held him down, and he's trying to reestablish himself as a starter. We'll see how that goes. Mitch Keller has looked good.
Yeah.
Touching 100. Right. I think the big thing for him is that swerve that he developed recently. If he can harness that, because he's had trouble locating his slider and his curveball, so now he's throwing the slurvy kind of thing. If he can locate that consistently, he threw it yesterday against the Phillies a couple of times. I remember he threw it to Didi Gregorius, back-to-back pitches, and Didi just spit on both of them. But I think he spit on them, not because necessarily they were bad pitches, but I think that he was just a little surprised to see that from Mitch. And then Mitch faces JT Romuto, misses with a couple slurves, count goes 3-2, and Roberto Perez behind the plate just gave him a sign, like, let's throw it again, let's do it. This is a pitch, you're going to need this in the regular season, this is just spring training, 3-2, bring it. And Mitch threw just a gorgeous slurve for a called strike 3, and Romuto knew it. That's what you need to see. But how long you'll be able to see that is a question, because now it's one thing to see it in March when guys, it's a new pitch to opponents and they don't have that in their book yet about Mitch. But by June, July, they will. So can he harness it enough for it to still be effective when it's not the new toy anymore, when it's an established part of his arsenal? That's a big question. Beyond that, you're going to see a lot of guys in that rotation this year.
You might as well put a revolving door in.
Yeah.
As simple as that. By the way, a guy I root for all the time is one of the minor league pitching coaches. That's Vic Black. You did a great story.
Oh, yeah.
You did a great story on Vic back on the 1st of March about mm-hmm. Vic. He started his career here in State College.
And so, I remember that, yeah.
And I think I, among many other people, think the world of him. He's one of the great guys out there. I think it was out of Dallas Baptist, if I recall. And really a great guy, and I'm glad to see he's succeeding as a coach at this level.
Yeah, they think a lot of good things about him. He's really, he's put together that database, the component of a video database of every pitch thrown kind of thing the guys can refer to. It's a pretty big, project, but he's tackled it, and the enthusiasm, and he's just relatable to a lot of these guys, which is a big thing. That's one thing with the Pirates development system that's so much better than it was 3, 4, 5 years ago under the old group. There's just a lot more personality, a lot more. But I mean, they say it's player centric, and by that, it's in the past, especially I'll look at the pitchers. In the past, the development team was like, here's what you're going to throw and here's how you're going to throw it. Go out and do it. And some guys bristle with that. Now there's a lot more input on the player side. How did that pitch feel to you? Did that pitch work for you? Did you feel comfortable throwing it? And then they build from there. It seems like an obvious thing, but the old group just didn't grasp that. The new group does. And I think, we'll see if the results pay off. But for now, I just sense there's a whole different mojo going on over at Pirate City during in minor league camp, and it's better,
right.
It's better.
Yeah, no question. Which they need. Look, there's a line in the movie Mission Impossible Fallout where they say hope isn't a strategy, and like, well, you haven't been around, you must be new, right? But when it comes to marketing in sports, hope is a strategy. Where in spring training, you develop some hope. Colorado gave their fans some hope. They signed Chris Bryant. Right,
yep.
Carlos Correa, all of a sudden the Twin Cities, they feel like they have hope. It may not be realistic. They may have overpaid, but they gave their fan base hope.
Yep.
Okay. What are the Pirates giving their fan base?
Fireworks night.
Oh, good. I love that. You know, and I hope they go off well.
They give you fireworks night.
And dollar dog night. And dollar dog night.
Yeah. And in typical Pirates fashion, the very first Dollar Dog night, they ran out of buns.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was just so piratey. But, I get where you're coming from. And, you know, I'm not going to tell Bob Nutting how to spend his money because it's his money. He can do what he wants with it.
Right, exactly.
But you owe something to people who, you know, pay to come see your product. And, boy, it's just, you know, the fan base in Pittsburgh, you know, if ever a group deserved the term long-suffering, and to a degree maybe abused, I mean, taken for granted, it seems. I feel for them. I mean, yeah, I don't count myself as a fan per se now that I'm in this job, but, you know, I grew up a Pirates fan. I grew up on the north side of Pittsburgh, as you probably can tell from my accent. And, you know, I know how these people want, you know, and they demand their teams be winners. And the Steelers deliver, and the Penguins deliver, and the Pirates give you fireworks.
Yeah. And
the wrong cut.
And bunless Dollar Dog Night. All right.
$10 dog night.
No, I said bunless Dollar Dog Night.
Yeah.
Rob, always a pleasure. I mean, I want when they made the playoffs the three straight years, those fans came out in droves. It told me that Pittsburgh is a great baseball town. Just give them something. That's why I feel bad for them. All right.
Someday, maybe, my friend. But I would be remiss too if I didn't take. I just want to give a shout out to my daughters. I'm sure they're both listening.
Cool.
Up there, they're both they're not studying hard like they should be.
Yes.
But just say, hey, ladies. Yeah, it's Friday. Go to the cafe tonight, I suppose. But, I would be.
What other dad would tell their daughters that? You're dad of the year.
it's either go to the cafe or Monkey Boys down the highway, you know, so I don't know. Although I'm a gaff guy myself. That's my first preference. But, you know, they have kids today, a little different.
Different. But I'm glad you're able to say hi to them. That's great. And yes, I'm sure they are listening. All right. In fact, after listening to your evaluation of the ball club, they probably want to go to the cafe.
Man. That's what happens, man. Drives you to drink.
Oh, golly. All right. Rob, thanks so much. Hope to see you soon, by the way. So
we'll do. I'll be up there every now and then, Steve. Yeah, we'll hook up sometime.
That sounds great. I look forward to it, my friend. Or I might go down to a ball game down there, too. So,
yeah, you know, let me know.
I will.
Great.
Thanks,
man.
Thanks, Rob.
Talk to you later.
See ya.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.